Right now, we're facing a man-made disaster of global scale.
We are the first generation to feel the impact of climate change and the last generation that can do something about it.
If we put together science, technology, traditional knowledge, we can protect our planet.
I wanted to act as if the house was on fire, because it is.
This is People Taking Action, Sustainable Ocean Alliance edition. For this season, we've teamed up with the Sustainable Ocean Alliance to bring you stories of people around the world who are making their sustainable ocean projects a reality with the help of an SOA grant. My name's Alex Whitebrook, and with me, as always, is Khadija Stewart.
Hey, hey, hey! It's very early in the morning. I'm trying to find my energy, but I'm excited.
Today, we're going to be talking with Enanja Irawan, who's a young entrepreneur out of Indonesia. She is a co-founder of an NGO called Carbon Ethics, whose mission is to essentially demystify the climate crisis and try to help inspire and enable climate action through education and community project activities. Yeah. So they have several projects going on around Indonesia in which they're doing things that offset carbon, like mangrove planting or coral planting and farming. And through offering these projects through their website, they're able to connect with businesses that want to offset their carbon and use their projects for that purpose, and also advocate with the government to prevent ocean wastes. They also plant a minimum of 30,000 trees a year. At the moment, Enanja holds the position of Chief Growth Officer with Carbon Ethics, and she's heavily involved in leading Project Tumbu, which means grow in English. This project is the one that the Sustainable Oceans Alliance is funding for Carbon Ethics to help them reach more people in Indonesia than they have before. So we're really excited to talk to Enanja more about that project today. But before we jump into that, we'll have a little look at
Indonesia.
Indonesia, yeah.
But as always, climate change affects everyone. Indonesia is no different. On the climate predictions, Indonesia's experienced temperature increases of by 0.8 degrees Celsius by 2030. That's just now. Their rainfall patterns are predicted to change. They have a rainy season ending earlier and the length of the rainy season becoming shorter. Of course, it affects the economic sectors, agriculture. But interestingly enough, Indonesia was the world's fourth largest emitter of greenhouse gases in 2015-2016. And I find that was wild because it wasn't because of fossil fuel. It was because of the level of deforestation that was taking place and like the peatland mega fires to a lesser extent. And
crazy.
Yeah, I find that was crazy. And the country recently overtook Australia to become the world's largest exporter of thermal coal. They have some work to be done when it comes to climate change and mitigating climate change and adapting to it when they clearly have, they're exporting coal, which is one of the things driving climate change. So
massively. Yeah, that is shocking.
Yeah. Of course, the government made a pledge to cut emissions by 29% to 41% by 2030 compared to a business as usual scenario. And they intend to put a lot of efforts into shifting land use and have it be more ecological or socially beneficial for the people. Because the Indonesian forests are home to thousands of plants, animal species, and 50 to 60 million Indonesians depend directly on the forest for their livelihood. That's a huge percent. That's more people than in my home country, Trinidad, multiplied by 50.
That is crazy. And despite these ambitions from the government to increase their renewable energy and sequester the amount of carbon that they're letting into the atmosphere as a country, there are no specific policies in place to enforce it at the moment. And this is all despite the country's extremely high vulnerability to climate change related sea level rise and flooding. Jakarta, a mega city of 30 million people, is literally sinking. And they've put up 20 kilometers of seawalls in the past decade. But even in the past 3 years, along with loads of the reinforcements they've put up along riverbanks, they've still managed to experience waterlogging and sometimes even flooding in the northern districts of the city of Jakarta. So absolutely appalling. And it's a situation that's only going to get worse in the years to come. So there is urgent need for action. Mm-hmm. But luckily, we've got people like Enanja there.
Exactly. Our project is tackling the solution. The problem, hands on. They have That's a deforestation it. Problem. She's reforesting.
They have a coastal degradation problem. They're planting mangroves, which are famously extremely essential for mm-hmm. the prevention of coastal erosion. So, yeah, very pertinent and poignant work from Carbon Ethics and Inanja, and we're excited to talk to her. All right, let's do it.
Hi, Inanja. We're so excited to have you here, part of our SOA Special Edition season. Your work, you know, Alex and I talk about it a little bit in the beginning, and it's amazing. You're amazing, and it's super interesting, and of course, we want to get to know more about it. So if you could just dive in and tell us more about Carbon Ethics and your SOA-funded project with Carbon Ethics, that would be good.
Sure. Hi, Alex and Khadija. Happy New Year, and very happy to be in this podcast on behalf of Carbonetics. Yeah. Yeah. So my name is Inandia Irawan. I'm one of the co-founder of Carbonetics, and currently I'm looking after growth, finance, legal, and policy and advocacy in Carbonetics. Pretty much everything except for operation. Yeah. We're an NGO that started back in May 2019. And we, the three of us, the co-founders, actually met in the One Young World 2018 in The Hague. So the three of us felt like we have an instant connection when we talk about climate change, and the three of us really wanted to do something back home. So when we go back home, we really like to find excuses to go to the islands, actually. I think, Khadija, you're from the islands as well. How nice it is to lay down on the beach. So we kept on looking for excuses to go back to the islands. But whilst we're there, we're looking at our seas and see a lot of waste, see a lot of plastics, and at the same time, lots of mangroves are not taken care of. We started making conversation with the local fishermen as well as with the local farmers there, and we talk about how about if we fund you guys to plant the mangroves in the north coast of Jakarta. And so that's where how the idea started, basically, with Carbonetics. We started channeling funds to the local farmers and fishermen to fund mangroves in the local coastline. And we then understood that mangroves have got 10 times more sequestration power than terrestrial forests. So we learned more about marine science, and none of us are from marine science background. All of us are corporate activists. So when we started to learn more about this, it's just getting more and more interesting. We open up doors and opportunities for volunteers to come as well. And so when things started to get busy, we needed to look for funding, and SOA came onto our radar, and we applied, and we felt like we've got the same values with SOA, which makes things easier in the conservation space. Yeah, that's where we're at. And so far, the grant from SOA has been really useful for us to conduct trips and to go to the islands, because it's actually not that near, and also do stakeholder mapping and also social activation, because actually at the end of the day, conservation is about connecting with the local communities over there, not just about the planting, because you want to make sure that the trees stay alive. Yeah,
and
so that's
can't be there.
Yeah, exactly. I can't be there all the time. That's why we do capacity building for the farmers, in order, you know, to teach them how to do proper reporting and monitoring of the trees. So then we do quality planting instead of quantity, meaning that we teach them to do proper reporting, monitoring, and to the point you have to post the photos onto to the web, and they can do it themselves. So then we bring transparency to our funders as well. Yeah, that's in essence how Carbonetics started and how SOA came to our radar.
Brilliant. Yeah. And before SOA came on the scene, what was the journey like in founding Carbon Ethics and meeting your co-founders? What was your personal journey to come to the kind of activism and environmentalism that you're involved in today?
So my personal journey, I think before late 2017, I wasn't really that environmentally conscious. I came from a family that has been working in oil and gas for decades. My dad worked in oil and gas. Oh, wow. I myself still working for BP, and that's a different story if you guys want to dig deeper on that and how I try to channel the activism inside the BP company as well. But anyway, so I went to Papua, which is the least populated island in Indonesia. It's on the east side of Indonesia. And there's this town that's just opened in 2009. So before that, it was actually forest. It's literally all mangroves. So the government opened that for transmigration area. So they moved people from Java, from Sulawesi, to stay in this new city. And when I went there, I wanted to learn more about their culture and their local customs. But when I went there, all the rivers were populated with plastic bottles. And it was really horrible, to the point that after that trip, I told myself that I'm gonna go on a plastic diet. So I actually, my activism journey, to answer your question, Alex, was started from plastic diet. And then after that, I went to this global rabbit hole of digging up more information about what went wrong with our environment, right? So then I found out that plastic or waste management is just part of the problem. The real issue is actually on climate. So when I met with my co-founders, we're just match made in heaven. Like, we talk the same language, we discuss in the same wavelength. And I was working on a project in BP in regards to low carbon culture. So how do we create low carbon inside the company? And we were creating carbon calculator as well. So then that's when I started to discuss with my co-founders, how about we included scientific base into our approach? And that's the founding of Carbonetics, which is carbon and mathematics, actually, because we started with calculator. So yeah, but then eventually we decided to focus on marine science, which is the blue carbon conservation, planting mangrove, seagrass and coral, initially on the north coast of Jakarta. That's quite a winding story, but
it's a great journey that you've been on, to come from the background that you have, obviously being very involved in the gas and oil sector, but having an impact in your own way and wanting to make a change as well within that sector, leading to carbon ethics and your own activism outside the organization as well, is really inspiring. It's really that we need cooperation on all fronts for overcoming the climate crisis. What about since Carbon Ethics has been founded, since you founded Carbon Ethics, what are the biggest achievements and the major projects that you've been leading?
Yeah, so the specific SOA project that we proposed to SOA is called Project Tumbuh, which is, it actually means grow in English. And it is our first project in the north coast of Jakarta. I think on the back end of it, I should share that Jakarta is sinking, right? It's massively sinking. We want to do something on the north coast of Jakarta to help protect the local communities there. And there's quite a lot of them. So far, we've been able to plant it more than... North coast of Jakarta.
It's particularly affected, right?
Yes, definitely. It's sinking about, I think, 10 centimeters per year or so on the north coast of Jakarta.
Wow.
So the Project Tumbuh focusing on planting on that area. And we've got small islands around it in the north coast of Jakarta. And that's where our planting site is located at. So in terms of achievements, from May 2019 until today, we've been able to plant more than 15,000 mangroves, more than 4,000 seagrass, more than 2,000 corals. And whilst doing that, we sequestered more than 1.7 million kilograms of CO2 equivalent, gave alternative income to more than 50 household farmers, and partner up with more than 30 corporate partners that channeled their funding through us with the help of SOA as well. So I think it has been quite fast-paced growth. I think some of the volunteers within my organization are asking, right, are you guys a corporate or NGO or a startup? Like, questioning our identity, because we're in this sweet spot of actually an NGO, but three of the founders are all from corporate background. So we've got the drives, but at the same time, it's actually for social cause. So yeah, that's where we are at this point.
That's really inspiring. Really cool. How do you find that having that corporate background really helps drive progress in the NGO world? What was the transition like for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, we set up Carbonetics from ground zero. So we never had a transition. We just know how to do things how we know it. And we came, three of us came from corporate backgrounds. And therefore, we would set things up with the proper structure. We would be professional when we come to the meetings. And we would have, and I'm a transformation professional. So I apply agility in conservation, which means that things are moving fast and it's based on human interaction. I think the feedback I've received from my volunteers is that it's as if we're working in a corporate, but it's just that the output is actually for NGO. It's been quite interesting because we also don't want any dollar to spend to go to waste. Even if it's NGO, it doesn't mean that it has to be just ceremonial. We want it to be impactful. We want to see the value chain, and we analyze everything. We've got proper reporting. I felt like coming from corporate background had helped to build the rigor on when we established the foundation.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how you transfer your skills from the corporate world into your NGO, because a lot of times that drive and stuff, you don't see it much with NGOs, and that's why some of them fail or they don't be as progressive as they should be. Yeah, I think that's good. We talk about these successes, but I am sure there were times where there were challenges and it was not 100% an easy road.
For sure. It's not an easy road, right? Especially when you deal with local communities. And in Thousand Island National Park, where our project is located at, it's actually a national park. So you would expect the government protecting it with their whole heart. But right. So sometimes, like, you look at, oh, all these islands, why are they sinking? Or why do you see sea level erosion when it's actually a national park? So when we propose a program to the government, because it's a national park, we have to do that legally. So as in, I don't know, maybe in Indonesia or other third world countries, dealing with government is still a bit hard when it comes to climate change, especially that you're asking for permission to plant trees, and even the permission to get that approved takes us months and months. Yeah. But on the other hand, we know that the farmers and the fishermen really need extra help or income from us, especially during COVID-19, when throughout 2020, from March or so, they've lost their main income, which is from fisheries. Mm-hmm. And some of them are part-time tour operator for those tourists that goes to the island. But when the islands were closed and fish markets were closed, they have no other sources of income. So they knock on our doors and, can you please plant more trees so then we get alternative income? And even so, doing that under the national park umbrella, you need to get permission, you need to get the paper signed and all that. So I think if you ask me, some of the biggest challenges has been bureaucracy. And coming from agility perspective, things get done very fast inside. But yeah, you know, when you deal externally, then it's a different, much different pace. So we're still trying to maintain the best relationship we can to ensure that we're on the picture. Yeah.
It's a big balancing act, isn't it? A tough line to walk. But I think it sounds like you guys are doing fantastic work. And I'd love to hear more about how the SOA grant project Tumbu has been developing so far in this Thousand Island National Park. Has this new grant and this kind of injection of cash flow, so to speak, has it really helped this new project develop faster? Or have you still come up against those same challenges of bureaucracy and a slow-paced development with when you're working in such a important national park?
Yeah, it's, I think the answer is both, Alex, to be frank, because for sure we use the grant to help us on the social spectrum, and it has helped us to do social mapping, stakeholder mapping, and also do a focus group discussion, understanding what these different farmers want and how do we build relationship with them, women empowerment network, and so on and so forth. So that has been invaluable for us, really. But when it comes to the government side, it does take a long time to establish a relationship. And for sure, you can't go there for a year and then already assume that there's a relationship established. It's a journey for us to get there. And often the ball is not on our court. You have a lot of other factors taken into it as well. So I think the grant from SOA has been really helpful for us. It's invaluable for us to understand the local community, social interaction, social values, being able to map the population or the income level. So then we are able to offer better offers to them as well when it comes to engaging them to plant our trees properly. And one of the most important part of this conservation work is actually capacity building, as I mentioned, because some of these farmers come from very different educational backgrounds, and we're able to give trainings through the grant fee as well for... Brilliant. Yeah, whether that's actually ecosystem or marine science related, or even digital monitoring related during COVID. Yeah, it has been invaluable.
I want to know what came out of some of those discussions, like with the farmers and with the local community members. What were they saying? What were their experiences like with what is happening?
Yeah, from all those discussions, we see combination of data of the mangrove samples that we're taking, for instance, as well as the results of focus group discussion, and also their dreams, right? So it's combination of data and dreams. So we talk about data, we talk about the sea level erosion, sea level rise, we talk about the changing climate, that they used to have fixed months or seasons for them to go to the sea to get fishes and sell it in the market. Now they don't anymore, like the seasons are just changing all the time. So those data, and also the problem about plastic, we found the Thousand Island National Park is hit by waves of plastics all the time. Like when we clean up beaches, 10 minutes after it was clean, it comes back again. So yeah, it's just never done. So those data and a combination of their dreams, meaning that they really want to protect their home. And therefore, they really support us to plant mangroves because they know that it helps them to stop from the big storms or tsunamis or surges. And at the same time, they know if they are more mangroves, it's actually nurseries, fisheries for local small fishes and crabs and shrimps as well. So those are their dreams. I don't know if you've been to our website, but we actually sell a package called Blue Carbon Package. So initially, when we plant with them, we only sell mangroves. But then they come back to us and say, but don't just plant the mangroves, sell seagrass. grass, plant the coral, plant the seaweed, so plant the whole ecosystem instead of just focusing on mangroves only. The more you talk with the locals, the more you understand how you can best make a product that you can perhaps send out for crowdfunding or even sell the idea for funders or grants such as SOA. But it's the one that's impactful to the local community, not just because you want to claim you plant 1 million mangroves. That's not our approach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We want to make sure that the ecosystem is properly built. So, yeah.
Do you think that the work that you do with mangroves and really restoring these, not just nurseries for fish, but barricades essentially for prevention of coastal erosion, do you think that this is going to have a really good long-term impact on not just the Thousand Islands, but obviously further in towards that northern coast of Jakarta? Is it going to help the city long term, or are you really more focused on making sure these communities are benefiting and their own livelihoods are benefiting?
So what I think I would share you a story. We had a discussion with one of the government deputy director in the marine area, and we told him our mission that we want to protect Jakarta from this sinking city or sea level erosion and stuff. And then he was saying, like, why do you do that? That's a lost game. It's a lost cause already. Jakarta will definitely sink. It totally break my heart to hear that, because how come you're so pessimistic? We have 10 years. We have nature-based solutions that we can still try. He may be right, and there are people that look at it like that, but we could also still just give our best shot. And I think whatever it is that we do, whether it ended up helping the North Coast or even just the local community, in the end, it would still be important. Absolutely. To go against the sea level erosion. Nature is really hard to predict, but we do hope that it does both. But I think the primary direct beneficiaries will be the local communities in this case.
Yeah. That's selfish. His response is selfish, because by that time he would probably be 6 feet under, because the future generations that will have to deal with the sinking Jakarta. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I really understand how that would impact you as well in your work. Like, to hear that coming from a policymaker, from a decision maker, it's tough. It's clearly an uphill battle, but just hearing the numbers and the progress you've made so far already is still really inspiring. And I think that the only way is up from here. You keep growing, and you're developing that rapport and the relationships with stakeholders in these local communities, and that's just going to keep growing. Fostering that kind of sense of community around this project is so important, and it's going to help you just take off.
Yeah, fingers crossed, hopefully. And we want to help more locations in other parts of Indonesia, because North Coast of Jakarta is not the only part that's sinking. There are lots of other parts as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys could do it, man.
Yeah, we were talking about the sinking of Jakarta and the sea walls that have been put up, and the way that some of them have become essentially defunct after just 10 years. These kinds of nature-based solutions are obviously the way forward. So it's, yeah. I don't know, it's appalling to me that someone could have such a opposing view.
He's selfish.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, it's an uphill battle, as you said. But I think our generation, they've got this stubborn optimism that I really admire, that this is something that we can fix. This is not something that just gonna go unfixed. We need to keep on pushing for actions that are on the best, on the good side.
The direction that you're taking carbon ethics and the expertise that you and your team feed into it from the corporate world and the diverse perspective that you have is going to be invaluable in the future. Where are you setting your sights next for carbon ethics? You say that you want to grow into new areas and expand your projects elsewhere. Are there any crazy ideas, brainstorming behind the scenes going on that you would be able to share with us today about the kinds of projects you're thinking of, the kind of different impacts you'd like to have?
Yeah, we've got other projects since Project Tumbuh. So North Coast of Jakarta is one, but we've got another one. It's in the Bintan Island, which is actually closer to Sumatra, if you're aware, whereas North Coast of Jakarta is more in Java. So that part of the country is really properly going to sink. So if you the coastal climate forecast by 2050, they're definitely going to be underwater. So we went there to face the local government and properly have discussions with them. This time we learned not to go under a national park, which is straight to the local government so that it's less bureaucracy. But we've got the approval to restore the mangrove area over there, about 4 hectares of mangroves to restore and about 12 hectares of mangrove forest to protect. And while protecting, we're planning for the farmers to also pick up garbage from the area whilst it hits the shore. So we give, and then they can sell those plastics, right? They can sell those garbage. So they get incentives from picking up those garbage. At the same time, they can sell the plastic as well and additional alternative income for them. And we're very happy that on that island, we can find so many species of mangroves, which we can turn to soaps, to shampoos, to batik, to scarves. So all those mangrove derivative product that we'll bring the expertise from Java to teach them and teach the women, teach the aunties on how to turn those products. And hopefully we can sell them as well for local alternative income. And we've got big dreams on that side. The local government are saying they want to create mangrove educational park and ask us to help use mangroves or marine science techniques to help filter the river that's currently quite dirty. So I think the opportunity is endless here if you just have that positivity on your head, looking at the glass half full instead of the glass half empty. And as long as you go with full heart and positive intent, I think people will welcome you. So that's one project, but we've got other projects on the pipeline. But I'm still trying to manage between time, job and NGO. And we've got 82 yeah. volunteers now, so it's getting really big. Yeah.
Sounds like a lot. Yeah. And the SOA grant is just the start. It's like exactly. team.
But it's also the fundament, really. Without that, we wouldn't be able to launch. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Wow. Your work is amazing. Your work is really hands-on and impactful. Actually making a difference. Actually will be making a difference.
It's really inspiring for us and for our listeners to hear everything that you guys are up to.
Thank you so much for the opportunity as well. Really happy to share our work. I think you guys are doing amazing, telling people stories like this and connecting people across the world through these stories. I think it's amazing and super inspiring as well.
So for anyone who wants to reach out to you or get involved with Carbon Ethics, can you tell the people where to find you?
Sure. So our Instagram, Carbon Ethics, it's CarbonEthics. You can find us on our website as well, carbonethics.org. We have quite a lot of volunteers open vacancy if you guys are looking for something to do during this COVID lockdown. We're welcoming different capabilities and specialties. And you can also find me myself, my personal Instagram, Nansirawan. So yeah, let's connect and chat and discuss and we'll take action.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on today. It really has been a pleasure.
Yeah, super inspiring. We definitely started off this SOA Special Edition season with a bang. Like, Inandia's work is absolutely amazing and so inspiring. And just hearing all that she's achieved so far, her personal journey, how she was able to mix her corporate world with the NGO world, how she was able to connect with all these different local communities, the farmers, the fisher folk, and just be on the ground and have impactful and meaningful change is truly inspiring. She's tackling the problem hands-on, especially with her mangrove planting and trying to stop the islands off the coast of Indonesia from sinking, which is truly heartbreaking. And the responses that she's been getting from some of the government officials, that has to be demotivating in a sense, but they're pushing through all of that and still fighting for the communities that are there and fighting to make a change. And inspiring. It's just inspiring.
Yeah. And we have to say that those government officials, they're wrong. They're just wrong. The fact that even Inandia was very modest when she was talking about the impact of her work and on ethics in general, although of course their main focus is the communities that they work with on those islands, in the national park and elsewhere, I think that it has to have an impact further inland, so to speak, on Jakarta itself and on the ability for the city to stay afloat, because those islands are off the coast of Jakarta and they are already a natural barricade to things like, you know, tsunamis and tidal waves and storm events. But with additional mangroves and restoring the environment there, they're going to have a much greater capacity to do so, to provide that protection.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's no small feat. So I think Inandia is very modest, and it's really great to see the SOA grant having a really great impact as well. So stay tuned for more SOA episodes this season. We're going to be bringing you stories from all over the world of people who are fighting to make the oceans more sustainable and to help overcome the climate crisis. These are issues that Khadija and I both really care about, and we hope that it further inspires you to take your own action.
Or to connect with exactly. our interviewees.
They're awesome. They're so down to earth. They just want to speak with people like you who are wanting to make a difference.
So as always, if you like what you heard today, make sure and follow us on all our socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter at PTApod. You can check out our website, peopletakingaction.org, to get in contact with us. And we have a Patreon. So if you want us to keep bringing these amazing episodes to you, be sure to join our Patreon. Sign up, you get amazing benefits, and it helps us continue to bring these stories to you.
Absolutely. And as always, thank you very much to Legion X for providing the fantastic song we use to mix for our theme. And thank you very much to all of you for listening in. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.